This is part audiobook of Other Tongues, Other Flesh by George Hunt Williamson. Download the PDF book from the net to follow the text here. Also, a copy on Galactic servers here. Prologue. Before the eyes of Milton's Satan peering into chaos appeared a new expanse, another vast illimitable ocean without bounds, the distances of interstellar space. And for a moment Satan was appalled by chaos and by space. So it is with modern man as he discovers new worlds like his own in the heavens about him. The world has not let the theme of cosmic voyage willingly die, whether in poetry and fantasy, in satire or seriousness, in the pulps or in the comics. There has been the growing realization of the possibility of other universes than ours, a plurality of worlds, even an infinity of worlds. We have become more fully aware of the insignificance of both our satellite, the Moon, and this rather small planet, the Earth. Man began to think that if life possibly did not exist on other planets in this system, perhaps it would be found in other universes. The idea that Earthbound man may someday journey into the heavens to discover other men and women, like or unlike himself, seems to be a conception the world persists in entertaining. From the time of Lucian it has existed in European literature. Why the appeal of this perennial theme? Is it curiosity? Is it humility? Is it perhaps a result of the essential loneliness of man? Is it because within man's soul lies the truth, that mortals exist on other spheres? From a fanciful vision of other worlds where all five is beautiful and good and just. We come back in somber mood to Earth, which seems indeed a sad and silent planet. Man on Earth knows in his heart that other worlds are also inhabited, but he is reluctant to admit even to himself that Earth is only one small house of the many mansions in the Father's house, and worse, that she is a fallen house, a disobedient house, a wayward house. In 1867, Matthew Arnold described the Earth well when he said, "A darkling plain, swept with confused alarms of struggle and flight, where ignorant armies clash by night." The people of Earth today are either confused, amused, or simply terrified by the reports of unidentified flying objects and various types of extraterrestrial spacecraft seen in the skies and detected under the seas. If they accept the theory that life exists on other worlds besides our own, they cannot believe anything but stories of monsters, robots, sinister vegetables, or armies of evil, invading, mechanical Frankensteins. Many people today are asking, if spacemen are here, why don't they land and contact our leaders? Why don't they explain their mission? Did these same individuals ever stop to think that no sane Earthman would descend into a pit of crawling rattlesnakes? With all Earth's strife, with bloody wars that carry thousands of men, women and children to slaughter worse than any circus of Nero or medieval Inquisition, is it any wonder that spacemen have not landed here? Six, however, these brothers from outer space have landed here, and they have contacted those whom they knew would receive them in the spirit of brotherly love and truth. It is now reliably reported that over 100 personal contacts have been made between Earthmen and saucer occupants. They sought and seek those who have been looking for them. This is what they mean when they say, "We do not choose you, you choose us." Would these highly developed beings care to contact those who have held the people in slavery for centuries? No, because their coming to Earth will eliminate all forms of greed and selfishness. The actual owners of the Earth are on the side of the negative, dark forces, while the Sons of Light of the Space Confederation are of a higher authority. And being of a higher authority, they seek out those who love truth and truth alone. Like Diogenes, they search long and unceasingly, but unlike Diogenes, they find a man here and a man there, not many, but some. The people of Earth like to picture themselves as lords of creation. One well-known anthropologist believes that far, off worlds may contain gelatinous masses that control diabolic machines, but of men elsewhere, he positively states, never. Those who do accept life as existing on other worlds believe this life will be much as it is on Earth, vain, full of pride, lust, greed, life that is warlike and aggressive as it is here. while one hand turns thumbs down on the idea. 7. Of other planets being inhabited, the other hand writes on and on about the inhabitation of other worlds beyond Earth. People have been brought up on Buck Rogers, Flash Gordon, Superman, and many other fictional heroes of outer space. They have lived in a world of fantasy and make-believe for so long they don't recognize the truth when it is presented to them. Yet, our world of fantasy has its purpose. Many gaze at the starry heavens and ask, is it all part of some gigantic scheme? Is there really a creator? Or have we evolved from a single cell that originally developed because of a freak accident in nature? Are we alone in the universe? Reason tells them that out of billions and quadrillions of worlds, life must exist on many of them. And those who have complete faith in their creator realize he wouldn't create man and place him on one planet alone. They know he wouldn't create other worlds to be merely floating balls of poisonous gas or vapor. First came inhabitable worlds, then came man. Men on Earth are afraid that if suddenly other men on other worlds are made known to them, they will face awful retribution, that their horrible crimes against humanity and the Creator's laws will not go unpunished. And like naughty children, they are reluctant to give up their dangerous toys and their destructive ways. So, now that their brothers from outer space are here, they are going to hide in a closet until these older brothers go home. Then they can come out and start their foul play all over. 8. Again. One word of acceptance on the part of Earth, men and these brothers are liable to step in and teach them something, and children never like to go to school, especially if they have to be obedient and good. Yes, there are brothers of ours in the skies overhead. They are not to be worshipped as gods, but they are to be listened to as one listens to an older brother who has traveled much and who knows the pitfalls of life and who has knowledge tempered with love of fellow man and the Creator. This brother of ours is attainable, for he is here on Earth today. Will the men of Earth accept him? Whether they do or not, it is their right to decide. Since man on Earth has arrived at a place where only truth will be able to survive, it is necessary to reaffirm and establish three truths. Namely, 1. Science and religion are one and the same thing. God provided, man divided. There is no religion higher than truth, and truth cannot contradict truth. 2. The entire omniverse is magnetic in nature, and even culture is influenced by the laws of magnetism. 3. Space visitors, coming to Earth in spacecraft, are mentioned in the Holy Bible, ancient mythology, and in other documents thousands of years old. These visitors have been coming to Earth for several million years. They are now making themselves known to the world as a whole to lead mankind thereby into a new age as the Earth enters the more intense 9 vibrations of Aquarius. During the 19th century on Earth there was a great influx of universal truth. Many fine writings appeared, especially in the late 1800s. These scattered reports and ideas have a definite relationship to each other and tie into the pattern of present-day happenings. Although these various writers use different terminology, they are essentially saying the same thing. They are telling man that he is truly a god in his own right. This knowledge came to a selected few so that they could open the way for the world to awaken to a new age, an air age to replace the ancient fish or water age. What is the grand goal of it all? There is no goal, for we are heading for all perfection, but we will never get there. It is ever moving ahead of us as we progress. What then is the purpose of all our pleasure, pain experiences? We are to know perpetual expanding grandeur, thereby spirit will come to know itself. In this book, many references and quotations are given from the latest, authentic reports on the saucer phenomena. Because many believe that there are contradictions in some of the reported happenings, it has been necessary to show that there is a great story and a purpose behind all these experiences. These same things have been taking place for eons. Some may wonder why I refer to the Holy Bible so often in this book. It is true that the Bible is inaccurate, but not totally so. For the most part, it is the true history of a particular time and people. 10. In order to get an accurate picture of the saucer phenomena, every possible avenue of investigation into the past and present must be utilized. The author wishes to acknowledge the kind help and encouragement of others, for without them, this book would never been written. Many thanks to Thomas M. Cornelia for suggestions pertaining to magnetism, the universal I am, to Nava Del Hunter for ideas about the remnant, to George H. Lark for library research on certain sections of the Divine Tetrad, to Lillian Laughhead for her contribution of the Lemurian interpretation of the tracks on the desert, to Dr. Robert E. Lustig for ideas on the electrochemistry of the blood, to Winchester McDowell for the two illustrations of the electronic motion in the atom, to my wife, Betty J. Williamson, for research on the microcosm, macrocosm, and magnetism, the universal I am, to Frank A. Wing for his ideas about the prophets, and sincere thanks to many others. This book you are about to read is not an ultimate, no book is. It merely points the path, a signpost along the great way that leads to our infinite Father. This work is dedicated to all men everywhere, with the hope that they shall know the truth and the truth shall make them free. Through other tongues, other flesh, may we learn to pray, Father of us all, give us eyes to see, ears to hear, and hearts to understand. In brotherly love, I humbly submit this work to you. George Hunt Williamson. God Provided, Man Divided. Chapter 1. The Great Influx. Space visitors put an intensification of the cosmic program into effect in the late 1800s. The 1880s and 1890s saw the program manifest itself in strange phenomena and many books, new inventions and theories were suddenly put before the public. The great plan for the planet Earth moves along on levels of rises and plateaus. We are at present on a rising level. The 1890s experienced a rise, and the following 50 years was a plateau of leveling off time. The movement began before the 19th century, of course, but in a small way. Immanuel Swedenborg, scientist and mystic, brought great new truths to the spiritually hungry world in the 1700s, and there were other men, like Wesley and before him Spinoza. However, the great mystic, Father Jacob Lorber, was born in 1800, Nikola Tesla, inventor, was born in 1857, Steinmetz, electrical wizard, was born in 1865, Charles Hayfort, writer and researcher, was born in 1874, Charles Fillmore of Unity, was born in 1854, H. Blavatsky brought the great knowledge of theosophy to the world in the 1800s, H. W. Percival gave the world his knowledge, and later, 12 Thinking and Destiny, Dr. John Binu Brough, in 1882, released his monumental work, USP. Camille Flammarion, great French astronomer, was born in 1842, and among many others, D. Ouspensky, Le Comte de Nuit, etc. Thus, in the last half of the 19th century, universal truth made a valiant attempt to penetrate the mind of man before the great age of materialism set in with the advent of the colossal machine age. Men like Brown Landon, and Fleur Annoy, who wrote From India to the Planet Mars, contributed greatly to this expanding program under the influence of space intelligences. Even John Jacob Astor got in the plan and wrote about the coining electrically governed world and interplanetary travel in 1897. Besides a great influx of universal truth coming to the minds of man, there was a definite program instituted on the physical plane and on the surface of Earth itself. Space visitors were actually deposited and left on our world to mix, mate, and marry with us. The new ideas and theories first came out in book form, and this was the prelude to the appearance of spacecraft in the skies of Earth. In our present century, first came the science fiction tales of space travel, then came the actual space visitation. In Paris, France, in 1892, Flammarion said, "We dare to hope that the day will come when scientific methods yet unknown to us will give us direct evidence of the existence of the inhabitants of other 13 worlds, and at the same time, also, will put us in communication with our brothers in space." What marvels does not the science of the future reserve for our successors, and who would dare to say that Martian humanity and terrestrial, Earth, humanity will not someday enter into communication with each other. Then in 1896, Flammarion wrote Urania, and in 1897 things really began to happen. Here's the report as taken directly from the old records. Chicago Record, Friday, April 2, 1897, see Great Airship. Kansas City, Missouri. People excited, mystical black object casting before it red light startles whole city for the last 2 weeks. At last descended, 10,000 people swear they have no hallucinations. Scoffers and disbelievers claim the people have been seeing the planet Venus or the evening star, even though according to the almanac this planet should have set below the horizon at least an hour before. Object appeared very swiftly, then appeared to stop and hover over the city for 10 minutes at a time, then after flashing its green, blue and white lights, shot upwards into space, light gradually twinkling away and looking like a bright star. Time, 8:15 a.m. Everest, Kansas has sighted a strange airship. Competent reporters state that this must be the airship that was built in Oakland, California and which broke away at launching time. This giant airship hovered 1/2 hour at a time and descended at regular intervals very close to the Earth. A giant. 14 searchlight flooded the whole city with light from this aerial monster which with the velocity of an eagle darted up and away. Power source must have been attached to the light for it dimmed as the ship went up and away. An observer states that there seemed to be a basket or car beneath a great dark object thought to be a gas bag overhead. Car was shaped like a canoe and had four wings, two on each side, fore and aft. Light was greenish or blue against the light of a locomotive in the rail yard that was yellowish. Colored lights seemed to be all around the car. This unusual craft showed up later in Michigan. But before quoting from the record, let's analyze the above report. First of all, the authorities passed off the entire incident by calling the spacecraft the planet Venus. That same thing has happened in our present saucer saga. They called the object Captain Mantle was chasing Venus, when it couldn't possibly have been that planet. This craft over Kansas City flashed blue, green lights and this color combination is now predominant in saucer sightings of today. The report goes on to state that the power source must have been attached to the light for it dimmed as the ship went up and away. It is known today that the speed of saucers has a great deal to do with the color changes. Chicago Record, April 3, 1897, flying machine now in Michigan. People of Galesburg saw a brilliant white light approach from the SW, object appeared large and black with a crackling, sharp 15 sound. It hovered close to the Earth. Reporters state that they heard human voices from aloft, from the airship. When the ship went off, it seemed to be tipped with flame. Local comment was that the airship had caught fire, time, 10:00 a.m. Chicago Record, April 6, 1897, airship now into Illinois. Seen first at 8:00 a.m. in NW. Large red light. Suggestions of balloon are refuted because airship flew at tremendous speed into a high wind. Chicago Record, April 7, 1897, airship seen many times last few weeks. Large numbers of people first-hand witnesses. One time, a motorman of a trolley actually stopped his vehicle so he and passengers could look at the wonderful sight. Just ahead of his trolley, the ship seemed about 600 feet up and about 100 feet long. The motorman, Mr. Newville, says it was ellipsoid with large projections fore and aft. There was a bright headlight in front and a red light in the rear. From Hastings, Nebraska, came the report that the airship had been seen in Grand Island, Oxford, York and Kearney. Scoffers claimed these people had seen Venus, yet all the reporters were people of substance and not given to reporting spurious stories. This all happened in 1897, but we could date it 1956 and it would be right up to date. Today, officialdom tries to explain much of it away as natural phenomena. Airplanes hadn't been invented in 1897, so they explained it away as balloons or Venus. Today they say it's balloons, Venus, or 16 airplanes. 2,000 years ago they might have called it Apollo, or Chariots of Fire, or Wheels Within Wheels. Chicago Record, April 9, 1897, airship seen in Iowa. Between West Liberty and Cedar Rapids appeared a bright light, giant airship, steel body. When leaving it appeared to be a large star weaving about, and stars do not weave around the heavens. Chicago Record, April 10, 1897, airship sighted over Chicago and Evanston. People are tripping over themselves these days trying to get the best look at this green and white, lighted giant airship that has had the people all over the Midwest in a dither. Some people think the end of the world is near. Scientific minds have explained the whole thing away by now. The mystery will surely be cleared up in a few days. Mr. Carr, an aeronaut, has built an experimental balloon and is financed by a New York theatrical wig manufacturing company. Mr. Carr states his machine works marvelously, but cannot go against the wind. Power is storage battery with propeller. Professor Huff of Northwestern University and head astronomer of the observatory stated when asked to train his telescope on the object, "I am busy with sights on Jupiter and it would be too troublesome to change to look at this new thing." The next day, Huff said, "The thousands of people that are reporting this so-called strange airship are in reality looking at Alpha Orionis in the constellation Orion." 17. This great scientist was too busy with sights on Jupiter. It would be too troublesome to view for the first time a ship from another world. Although he refused to look at the object, he seemed to know exactly what thousands of other people were seeing. How would he know, since he only had the advantage of total ignorance? Chicago Record, April 12, 1897, giant airship continues over Chicago and environs. People all over the city are in an uproar, and while everyone is viewing this grand sight on the south side, two amateur photographers who are news dealers in Rogers Park, looked out and saw the airship. Their photo shows the Northwestern Railway Station and above it the purported airship. The photographers are Walter McCann and G.A.O. Vrocker. This airship was seen to come in over the lake and traverse the whole city for several days. The same report with an Omaha Dateline of April 11 says, "A gentleman brags he has mystery airship problem solved. He is an inventor and desires that he be allowed 35 acres to demonstrate his airship for the Trans-Mississippi Exposition." The gentleman didn't sign his name, but the reporter hopes the dilemma will be settled by his promises. The same report again, with a Fort Dodge, Iowa Dateline of April 11 says, "Old German residents say that this very same type airship came over Germany 30 years before and the people were scared to death, said the devil's army was approaching." 18. And these were his vehicles. The same report again, with a Milwaukee, Wisconsin dateline of April 11 says, "The residents of Milwaukee cannot be talked out of what they are seeing. Thousands report the authenticity of a giant, beautiful airship with colored lights. The police records are full of the story, for they have been called to answer what it is." Chicago Record, April 13, 1897, airship called a hoax. Several notable citizens are known to have caused airship seen, remains of paper and wood device in wreckages in their yard. No names given of the notables. The device mentioned was supposed to have been in the wreckage, but another column in the same paper said, "Airship seen in Rock Island, Illinois and Elkhart, Indiana. How could it have been seen if it was wrecked?" Chicago Tribune, April 12, 1897, "One chap knows all about the airship," he says. "These thousands of people didn't see a steel hull because this is the airship my friend has built in California and is on its way here to Chicago. Although, I must say, he sure has made good time, for he isn't due until next week and the hull is paper, not steel. My friend, oh, Charnute is on board too, and I will introduce all of you to him when he arrives. This chap is the secretary of the Chicago Aeronautical Society, Max L. Harmer." The same strange sightings were made at Sisterville, Virginia. In 1897 and other years, there were 19 amazing observances in Texas. The same old story, isn't it? Thousands of people in America observed this gigantic spaceship. Authorities called it Venus or Alpha Orionis, or a balloon. A balloon that couldn't go against the wind, yet the airship did just that. Notice where the report says, scientific minds have explained the whole thing away by now. That's exactly what they have been trying to do since 1947 in the present saga. Also, the idea that these are the devil's vehicles is thrown in as of the present. Not once a mention of their true nature. The 1897 episode is very important. Many space people were landed on Earth at that time. The Wright brothers brought in the air age a few miles away at Kitty Hawk, North Carolina in the same era. It is strange, or is it? That these brothers finally flew their controversial aircraft only a few years removed and a few short miles from the location where the giant, lighted airship of 1897 had made one of its final appearances? After 1897, man progressed more in the coming half century than he had in the previous 10,000 years. Our progression is due, in part, to intellects coming here from outer space. Great men helped push men's progress ahead hundreds of years in terms of advancement. Where it had taken thousands of years to elapse between the discovery of the wheel and the bow, the greatest discoveries the world had ever seen followed each other in rapid succession. The telephone, electric lights, the radio, 20 wireless, the automobile, the airplane, etc. What actually took place in the 1800s was the first large public demonstration of spacecraft in the modern, industrial age. After the Industrial Revolution, there had to be an influx of certain universal truths in order to create a semblance between highly advanced technical skill and undeveloped spiritually. The spaceships or airships of the 19th century were the physical manifestation of that great influx. Communication with extraterrestrial intelligences also began at the same time. The father of wireless, Marconi, in 1921 believed he had intercepted messages from Mars or some point in outer space. The theory that the waves were produced by electrical disturbances was disproved by the regularity of the impulses. Marconi conducted highly secret experiments before 1921 and knew beyond the shadow of a doubt that he was in direct contact with beings of other worlds. A woman in California writes, during World War II was teaching in Scotland. In 1918, headquarters of their YWCA in London wrote offering me the position of head of their branch office in Chelmsford near London. The main station of the Marconi world, Wide Wireless, was also there. Many men from Britain died in World War I, and it was my job to look out for many young girls away from home. I took room and board with a couple somewhat older than I. The husband was a very intelligent person and had a responsible position 21 with the Marconi Wireless Company. One day, he asked me if I would like to go through the Marconi station. I was delighted to go. During my tour through the laboratories, I was startled and almost petrified when we arrived in front of a huge, 10-foot-square, transparent case inside of which seemed to be a flaming mass, flames revolving like a wheel. I asked my friend what this was, and he said that they had been receiving wireless messages somewhere outside of Earth. I asked him to be more specific. And he said, "My dear girl, we have stations all over the Earth. But certain code is not coming from any of them. We are receiving signals from intelligent beings on other inhabited worlds." My friend then told me that Marconi at that moment was in Australia conducting experiment and trying to discover more about this momentous happening. They believed the signals were coming from the planet Mars. I have never mentioned this experience before, and I believe Marconi kept his work secret because he knew what the world would say. The lady who had the above experience lives in Santa Barbara, California, and is a respectable citizen of that city. Later in the 1920s and 1930s, more strange messages were received throughout the world as radio was developed. And radiotelegraphic messages from sources are being received today. The first radio contact with space visitors was reported by a research group in Arizona in 1952, and now contact is being made in Ohio, Iowa, Canada, California,